Greetings, meat sacks. It is I, Dave.
I guess we never say Dave on here, do we? I think we always say David. Anyway, hello, hi, it's me. We have returned. Well, I'm lying. It's not we, it's just me. Yes, it's a solo episode. I'm sorry. But also, I may have crushed it. Like, I don't know what it says about me that it's so easy for me to just word vomit for 28 minutes in a room with nobody else in it. Straight, no lulls. I'm telling you, there's not an ounce of fat on this episode. And depending on how you like your episodes, you may prefer fat, but you have to try both to really be able to differentiate between both experiences. So, that was me saving it before you tune out, okay? So just get this experience in and then listen to our catalog where it's the two of us and then compare and then you'll know for next time. Grant is out with likely an illness contracted by his child, and we've been here before. That's what he gets for procreating, right? If he was out partying with me, he'd probably be fine. I'm kidding. I'm kidding about half of it. But anyway, so Grant's out this week. He's not feeling great. We wish him a speedy recovery, okay? And he's going to be back here next week at full strength, and we're going to get right back to it. Damn it. Or else. Okay, fun episode this week. First half is like live action, real life stuff. So if you're a listener who enjoys reality and live action, then you're going to love the first half of this podcast. I cover the Oscars, some topical news, and then a full, weighty review of Dune. And when I say full and weighty, I mean like, I don't know, 8 or 9 minutes. You know, Grant's not here. I didn't want to get too deep on it. Really curious to hear his thoughts. And then we do some anime in the back half. We talk Frieren, Solo Leveling, Shangri-La Frontier, and then I ended up talking about Masters of the Air for maybe 5 minutes at the end or something, okay? Because, that's also flying by. And then when that's done, I swear I'm going to watch Shogun because Grant said I should, and we honor Grant on this solo episode. So, he's still going to have to edit in the intro, so Grant, if you could. Hi there, listeners. We are back. And by we, I mean me, because I'm solo. I presume past Dave, my future Dave, but your past Dave, will have informed you of the situation. So there's no need to rehash this and break continuity. Okay, we wouldn't want that. So solo episode this week, and let's just dive right into it. Okay, let's start with the topical stuff. Because we're a topical podcast here for all of your needs and desires on, consider us your Witch Weekly of the Week award for any Harry Potter fans out there. Okay, right to business. Let's start with the Oscars. I actually watched them. I was one of the few. Actually, you know what? Ratings haven't come out yet, or I don't know if they have, but I'm very curious to see or hear how they did from a viewership perspective. I know, for one thing, they started earlier this year, which is a definite positive. Why are award shows on Sundays to begin with? And yeah, why would you want it to go to midnight on a Sunday? Like, I don't know. It feels like the entire medium is kind of ripe for disruption. I think they tried a couple new things this year, but nothing crazy. Before we get to the awards, we should probably talk about like the best moment, which clearly in my view, and I'll speak on the behalf of pop culture. I mean, that's why you're here. No, it feels like the Ryan Gosling, I'm Just Ken performance really stole the show. Like he really crushed. From actual musical guests, Billie Eilish had a solid performance. I'll be honest, I may have fast-forwarded through the rest. In terms of wins, we're not going to do every category. I've got a couple that I will highlight. First, in Grant's honor, because I know he was stoked about this one, and so was the internet. And I hate to admit that I haven't seen it yet, but Godzilla minus one won for, I think it was VFX, and I think I read somewhere that was a $12 million movie. Very small team, very endearing speech. I saw that, they kind of felt like Rocky Balboa from the moment they got nominated, a big-time underdog. And if it's true about their budget being $12 million, even if that's just for VFX, or God forbid the whole movie, that's nuts. So if they did manage that, crazy hats off. They were quite literally, you know, competing against multi-billion-dollar conglomerates. So that's a huge accomplishment, and you got to give it to the little guy. And I know Godzilla doesn't strike many as the little guy, but by all accounts, you know, by you know, Grant's included, this was a very different Godzilla movie, and one that I still intend to watch. I think the biggest win of the evening, I kind of have two, but I think the biggest one has to be for Christopher Nolan for Best Directing. This was his 8th nomination. Fucking nuts. Which I think also speaks to, like, his batting average is pretty crazy. Like, he doesn't have that many movies. What is he getting? Is he getting nominated for, like, 75% of his movies? I don't want to Google it. But eight nominations is nuts. Crazy it took him this long to be recognized, but Oppenheimer, by all accounts, I'm not going to keep saying that, really kind of swept this evening, or the evening, rather, and did quite well. Cillian Murphy snagging Best Lead. Robert Downey Jr., that's a big one, you know, after a decade or more of Marvel movies, and then, you know, I think his comeback performance in Dr. Dolittle did not exactly strike critical acclaim. So coming in here with like a big character piece, as Strauss in Oppenheimer is a big flex. So shout out to RDJ. Man, Killers of the Flower Moon got shut out. I think I'm pretty sure they didn't win a thing, which is kind of nuts. I feel like that happens to Marty. You know, it's like he got all the wins when he was air quotes young, or at least younger than he is now. I don't know, but I know they didn't win anything too major. I was really torn on Lily Gladstone for this one because I think, you know, most people have a pretty difficult time with the idea that two opposing concepts or two opposing ideas can be simultaneously true. This is a good example, right? Lily Gladstone is both the heart of this movie, and also not, you could argue that she's not exactly the lead in it either. She's certainly like the leading female actor, but like I still hesitate to call it a lead part because there's like an entire third of the movie that she's not even in. But that's not the argument we're having. I think the big argument was, would she win or would Emma Stone win? Who were, you know, I didn't catch every nominated or every Oscar film this year, but I caught a lot of them. And I was very curious to see what would happen. You know, on my part, Emma Stone had the best performance of the year. There's just no denying that. The transformation that she goes through from, like, speech to body language to gait to just, like, it was just such a thorough performance that she gave in Poor Things. If you haven't seen that movie, it's one, unexpected, because I think they included all the non-nude scenes in the trailer. So if you, that's all you really had known about it, I think you'll be kind of surprised. But like even outside of that, like it's just a lot. She went really big and like really threw herself at that role. And you could tell she was pretty overwhelmed in her speech. So I thought that was a touching moment and ultimately the right decision. But I really urge everybody to see Killers of a Flower Moon if you haven't. I don't think the movie was profitable. It's a movie that absolutely should be seen. I know it's long. I know that's difficult. Which, for the record, I think longer movies are easier to watch in theaters as opposed to at home when you can pause every 20 minutes to scroll on your phone. Yeah, I don't think a ton of people saw it in theaters as evidenced by it losing money. But, you know, whenever it hits, if it's already on streaming, check it out. Lily Gladstone's performance alone is worthy of admission. But also, like, one of the best actual acting performances De Niro has given in a long time, and a completely new shade for DiCaprio, if you're a fan of his work. So, yeah. I think that's about it for me in the Oscars, and, like, what really hit majorly. You know, the John Cena thing was pretty out there. Ballsy, pardon the pun, but hey, man, sometimes you have to get a WWE star fully nude on the stage. And Jimmy Kimmel the host for the umpteenth time. And maybe eventually that'll do something. So I don't know. Yeah, okay, moving on. You know, let's stick with the topical theme. We're going to cover topical real-life things in the first half. We'll get to anime in the second half. Okay, on a somber note, RIP Akira Toriyama. You know, I'm sure you know, you've probably seen this plastered everywhere, so I won't spend a huge amount of time on it. I'm sure most of my thoughts have probably already been echoed and said more eloquently by others. But I think, like, the most common sentiment that I've seen expressed is, yeah, like, he was probably my first exposure to anime. I think he has exposed many generations of people to Goku and anime in general. You know, Dragon Ball, God, I don't even know when it first aired. But you better believe I still watch reruns. I still watch highlight videos. I'm caught up on Super. I loved, you know, the last movie he was in, directly involved in, Super Broly. Yeah, his work is fantastic. He went way too soon, man. First the mangaka for Berserk, and now this. It's crazy. It just felt like, you know, I think they kind of said it, but he had a lot of things kind of still on the go, a lot of plates still spinning, so really curious to see where it ends up going. But nevertheless, you know, all of his work lives on in Goku and Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super, and all that. And I don't know, he had a lot more work out there that people may not be as familiar with, but I digress. I won't, you know, go through his whole discography here and now. So yeah. Okay, so, you know, more news anime-wise, this time a little bit more positive. Demon Slayer Season 4 begins on May 12th, which is big news, back-to-back. You know, I think part of our guesses and, like, theory crafting around this time last year was, what are they going to do? We still don't quite know how many episodes it is. There's, like, rumors I'm seeing 8 or 12. We don't know how it's going to be paced. I hear everywhere that, you know, that this Hashira training arc is quite boring and quite setup-y, and then it, like, kind of goes into the final arc of the series. So I don't really know what to expect. Are they going to do, like, a short season that tees up this final arc and then do a movie? Are they going to turn it around quick and do, like, a short season now and then another one early 25? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. I know that they had the theatrical release and the reviews, you know, Vivian saw it and said it was okay. No one's really clamoring about it. But yeah, we'll cover it. They're coming off a bit of a mixy, you know, I want to say dicey season 3, but not their strongest season. It's probably their weakest season to date, but that doesn't say much since Demon Slayer's done quite well. So really curious to see what they do here. Avatar. The live-action Avatar has been renewed for an additional 2 seasons. I don't even know what to say, man. Like, I haven't seen it yet. I hear people don't like it, and then Netflix reviews it. And then I hear people say everyone wishes Mindhunter could get another season, and Netflix has not enough people watched it. Is everything backwards? Who's out here dying for these Fullmetal Alchemist live-action movies? Who's out here clamoring for more Avatar live-action? I don't know. Who are these people? I want to meet them. And, you know, have them subscribe to the podcast. Okay, last piece of topical news. This one's breaking. I saw this right as it hit and record. The Batman by Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson, our Pats, is being part 2, being delayed a full year to October 2026. Wonder what's going on there. I mean, maybe they were just overselling this with their original release date. Maybe they both have a lot of projects on the go. I don't know. Who knows? It could be studio stuff. Warner Brothers seems quite, you know, DC Studios, whatever, has a lot on the go these days. Maybe a year of rest will not do them any harm. We'll see. And prep, right? More time for a good story. Who knows? Okay, this is the big part. This is the big review. The Dune review. God, doing this without Grant. Can you believe it? No, I'm sure Grant and I are going to get into this next week about both of our experiences, because we did not see this one together. I'm pretty sure we saw, I'm 99% sure he's seen it, and I'm not going to give any spoilers anyway, so, you know, it's been out a couple weeks, but I'm not going to, like, do the whole story breakdown. I'm just going to give you my general thought. My general thought is that, you know, the consensus is pretty overwhelmingly positive. You know, it debuted with, like, a 96% Rotten Tomatoes. It's still in the 90s, last I checked. Seems to be doing well box office-wise. And, yeah, critics, fans, everyday people in italics, people who don't listen to anime podcasts, for example, seem to really dig it. I saw it with Sam and my sister, neither of whom are major diehard sci-fi aficionados, and they both enjoyed it immensely. I enjoy sci-fi, but I also haven't seen everything that is out there. And I thought it was absolutely awesome. If anything, sci-fi almost feels like a reductive term when you talk about Dune. Like, I said this with part one, and I feel the exact same way with part two, in that when I was watching it, and then when the credits rolled, and I was leaving the theater, I had this feeling that I had just watched, like, a modern-day classic, and that I would rewatch this more than once, whether it's in the theater again, or at home, or, you know, it just feels like a Dune double feature on a hungover Sunday is in my future. Or, you know, like, I feel like it's going to be one of those, like, raise your kids on these kinds of, on the sci-fi movies that you fell in love with when you were young. And I'm definitely not young anymore, but, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's like this generational major motion picture of our time. And it's like, happens to be in this genre, and these movies just, like, don't happen. This thing's gonna fucking crush, not, you know, during award season. I feel like it's going to do well at the box office. So, yeah, it's really, really positive. Great action set pieces. You know, everyone talking about how, you know, the take you'll have heard a lot, I think, is that, you know, Dune Part 1 is quite setup-oriented. And it is, like, there's great action in it as well. I think there's a lot of payoff in the second and half or the last third of Dune Part 1. But yeah, like, you know, simultaneously, they have a huge amount of setup to do. They have a ton of world building to do. They have to establish a lot of characters' names, their factions, what their interests are, all the houses, the space politics, spice as this resource that kind of makes the world go around. Like, they have a lot that they have to establish. And they do that really effectively in Dune 1. And Dune Part 2 is like, okay, the chessboard is set, the pieces are moving, let's see how, you know, shit hit the fan. And it does. I recorded a brief, you know, review for Instagram and TikTok. You can follow us there at Part-Time Otaku Podcast, where I, you know, tried to encapsulate all this in like 90 seconds. And I think one thing that I did say that I'll touch on now a little bit more is, you know, I have not seen everything that Timothée Chalamet is in. I've seen, I think, a few movies at this stage. I get that he's, like, the new current thing. And I think that level of pressure, starring in back-to-back giant films, where if the protagonist doesn't deliver, like, the whole movie will fall apart around him, right? Like, he's quite literally a messiah character in these movies, and that's not a spoiler. I mean, they talk about him being like the chosen one in part one. So, you know, all of that to say, like, a lot of pressure on him, and he brings the goods. He delivers. The supporting cast also fucking crushes. Javier Bardem was barely featured in part one. They change the approach to his character a little bit in part two, or at least, like, you know, we just didn't see that side of him in part one, but he's in it quite a lot. He does a lot of heavy lifting. Rebecca Ferguson's, you know, Chalamet's mom in the movie, her character, you know, the direction of her character changes substantially, but she also delivers solid. Zendaya, you know, barely featured in movie one. Really, really great stuff. Good chemistry, good character development, relationship stuff. Yeah. Josh Brolin too, man. Like, again, I keep talking about how stacked the cast is. There isn't a bad performance in this movie. It's all around great. I thought, you know, my big question was like, okay, we've got political motivations. We have a finite, you know, fossil fuel type resource. We've got romance. We've got, you know, interplanetary, interstellar travel. Like, that's a lot to juggle. And especially the romance part, because Denis Villeneuve himself has talked about how, like, this is a, you know, this is a love story in many ways. And, like, I was just a little bit concerned, like, is it going to work? And it works. It really does. Proof is in the pudding. and they really nailed it. The best part of Dune, I'm going to be the millionth person who said this, but says this, but I think it's this, the scale. They made this thing, this movie, feel giant. This world, the planet itself. I think it's just experience and expertise from Denis Villeneuve, you know? Like, I don't think you get this movie without him having done Arrival, Blade Runner, Prisoners. Like, for as many wide-scoping, earthly shots as there are an equal amount of really intimate moments. And, I don't know, he navigated all of that deftly. I feel pretty confident in award season for cinematography, and not to mention the score. Obviously, Hans Zimmer, apparently doesn't miss. I don't know if it's that or if it's that, the movie is just so cohesive that the soundtrack just works really beautifully. But I do know that, like, if this goes, like, the wrong way in the edit, or if they don't dial it down properly, like, have any of you ever seen the Zack Snyder director's cut of Justice League and how fucking atrocious the soundtrack is? Anytime Gal Gadot is on screen in that movie, you get the... Sorry for your ears, but you get that every time she's on screen. And it's just like, we get it. Lady is Amazon. Like, it's so bad. And you get a lot of, like, those, like, big vocal, yeah, like, you know, just, like, moments that just, like, if done poorly, it would just really tank the movie. And, like, it always fits. It's totally, totally, God, I hope I didn't just go out there and my monitor went to sleep. And you best believe I'm not editing this. But anyway. Hans Zimmer. They crush. I hope they make all the money. And if they want to make a third, I hope they get the opportunity to do that with time to explore whatever else they want to explore. I think Grant had the intel on that. I think Denis Villeneuve said something about, like, he's writing part three, but at the same time, and which might already even be approved by the studio, but he's got something else in the pipeline for his next immediate project. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of time and space, okay? So, yeah. Love it. Free Ren, episode 26. There's your spoiler warning. God, can you believe this thing's almost done? Two more episodes to go. I don't want Free Ren to be over. It's like, I don't know if I've ever felt this way about a show, like, this specific way. And that, like, I don't want to, like, leave this world. Free Ren in particular, like, I don't know, man. God, it's just such a good anime. You know, if this show had been done, completed its season one run by end of 2023, it absolutely would have been my anime of the year. But maybe that means I can, you know, force it into my top five for 2024. I don't know how it works. It's like the bullshit way Crunchyroll does their whole qualifying thing. I don't know. But, you know, it's funny. I think last week Grant and I were talking about, like, oh, you know, that Free Ren versus Replica fight was, like, kind of cut off a little quick. Wish we could have seen more. What we did see was fantastic. And then we open on the Sakuga. And they, like, we get a lot more this episode than we did last. And there are some, like, big-time twists in that fight. There are more twists with the replicas regenerating. And we got scary Free Ren. Scary clone Free Ren. And also, like, she clearly has an oh shit button that she hasn't mentioned, and I'm sure everybody caught it, but, you know, the oh shit button when the replica bodies Fern, and we're nervous for it, shatters her staff, by the way. I hope that means an upgrade's coming. But, you know, after Free Ren, you know, takes her out, she does say, like, hey, it was the first time I had to do that in 80 years, which, you know, is around the time I think they beat the Demon King. So I really wonder if we're going to see that fight. Like, they've been showing us so much, you know, but a lot of what they show us kind of is usually related to Himmel, but I feel like it's an eventuality that we're going to see that fight, and I just cannot wait. Make a movie of it. I don't even care. God, do a whole... Show me the whole journey. I don't know. I know that's not the point, but God. Just killer, killer stuff. Great, great episode. And man, like, I have solo leveling here, but, like, I don't know. It's good. Like, I enjoyed episode 9. It was cool seeing Jinwoo ace a, like, legitimate villain character. I enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. But, yeah, like, I don't know. It did not blow my head off. Like, I saw a lot of people being like, oh, this is the most action and the most, you know, the funnest fight scene they've done. Eh, I don't know if I feel that way. And if it is, eh, you know, there's my one syllable review. It's fun. It's not crazy. Ironically, I think, you know, the binge factor is, like, a big factor with this show and shows like it, which is where I mention SLF. Shangri-La Frontier, episode 11 I'm on. Basically, Sunraku just got new daggers because... Is it Rabbituza? I don't know wherever he went. He went and he confessed to the NPCs over there that, you know, him and his buddies are going to try and take out that unique mob. So that's what's happening there. It's also still fun. Grant did tell me last week, he was like, yo, dude, can you know, you gotta get on Shogun. It sounds really good. He just sent me a thing before this of, like this little tidbit of behind the scenes and how they're coming up with some of the kanji in the show. And I'm very, very excited, to dive in. I think because it's, you know, like, I don't think the episodes are long. It's live action. It's on Disney. I got a bit of time. So I think the plan for me is I am going to check out Shogun just as soon as Masters of the Air wraps up. And on Masters of the Air, not that anyone has asked, notably, I'm very interested to hear how the show does, like, viewership, perspective, and also maybe award season. I know I sounded a little lukewarm on Masters of the Air early on. It has really heated up. I think the characters have really grown well on me. Austin Butler's, you know, Elvis voice thing is, like, maybe still there, maybe it's, like, a weird choice. It's hard, but I don't notice it quite as much. I think, like, your ear does eventually kind of get used to it. And, you know, the other Buck, there's Bucky and Buck, and the other guy, he's just doing a Chris Evans impression. And it's so, Chris Evans as Captain America specifically. And it is so hilarious and so distracting considering he keeps saying the word Bucky while sounding like Captain America. And I think, you know, if you're an MCU fan, you can put those things together. And it is very jarring, especially in the first episode or two. But kind of over that now, as far as the war timeline goes, like, it's very much like Band of Brothers in that, you know, we're making it through the mid-1940s right now, so I think D-Day just happened, but here's a mild spoiler that you may care about. It's, you know, it has nothing to do, well, I mean, I guess you know how the war ends, right? But the interesting part is, like, they talk about D-Day, and they had shown, like, a promo for it, and fun fact, none of our characters are in D-Day, so, like, it's just a thing they talk about, and, like, one of the navigators helps plan the routes and all that. But they really glaze over it big time. Like, I mean, I get it. You know, they decided to cover veterans from a very specific group, and it just so happens that they were not involved in the bombing of Normandy, or the invasion of Normandy because they were doing other things at that time. But it's like, why show it at all? I mean, it kind of impacts their situation and all that, but it's interesting. But at the same time, it's like, if none of your central characters are in D-Day, do you really want to spend an episode shooting it with characters nobody knows? I don't know. So I can kind of see their point of view on that. But I think we're in, like, June or September of 44 at this stage in Masters of the Air, so we are hurtling towards the conclusion. Sam has never watched anything like this, and the benefit is, I think it's convinced her to watch Band of Brothers after this, because it is really, like, it's very good, and I still think Band of Brothers is a touch better. Well, maybe substantially, but also, you know, we haven't finished this yet. But most importantly, this gives me another excuse to rewatch Band of Brothers, and I'll take that whenever I can. So that's it. I'm going to wrap on Masters of the Air, and then we're going to watch Shogun, and I'll be back with some feelings on that. I got to figure out how to watch this damn Ninja Kamui show, man, because, you know, I don't know. Like, what am I supposed to do? Borrow it from the seas of the internet? Like, is this my only option? Like, you want me to get a cable subscription in 2024 so I can watch it? Like, it's just weird how we end up here sometimes. I don't understand it. But I'm really intrigued in that show, and I see a bunch of people covering it, so I don't know. I'll have to figure something out. Maybe there's a service out there that I'm just unaware of. So yeah, we'll cover Shogun and Ninja Kamui in the future. Okay, I think that's about it. Thank you for listening to the solo episode. It's always crazy to see that I can just talk straight for 28 minutes. You know what I mean? There's not a lull in here. This is what the inside of my head is like, it feels like. Though maybe a little bit less refined, a little bit more crazy. Okay, that's it. Subscribe to the podcast if you like. You can find us on Apple Music, on Spotify, at Part-Time Otaku Podcast. Also, same thing for the socials, primarily Instagram and also perhaps the TikTok at Part-Time Otaku Podcast. We'll be back next week, same time, another episode, hopefully back with the original duo, and it won't just be my dulcet tones blessing your ears. Okay, bye guys. Cheers.